Actually working. I think that's
working. I think it is. It says it's recording.
Good evening. Welcome to another edition of After Hours. I'm your host, Tim Mendes. Tonight, I'm going to be talking to the fantastically talented author of Gothic fiction, Jennifer Ann Gordon. Thanks for coming on.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello. Hello, Tim. Thank you for having me and giving me a really good excuse to have some bourbon at 2 p.m. my time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, somebody asked me the other week, somebody who doesn't actually drink, they were like, you know, I don't drink. Is that going to be a problem? It's just like, no. The whole drinking thing is adds up that I will be drinking. So,
yeah, exactly. I interview people and like 5 minutes before, we're always just like, oh, hey, you can get a cocktail. And they're like, I can get a cocktail? Wait. And it's amazing how fast people can whip up a gin and tonic these days.
Like, oh, mate. Yeah. I mean, I love gin. Is my tipple of choice, to be honest.
Is it? I'm allergic to gin. Isn't that awful?
I'm allergic to pretty much everything other than gin.
maybe it's because you're so filled with gin that you have become gin.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me.
I know. The first time I had gin, I loved it so much. This is a million years ago. Loved the gin and tonics. Was like, this is going to be my drink. I feel so British. My grandma used to drink these, but she was kind of cool. She was like a painter alcoholic, not just an alcoholic. So I thought it was going to be
great. What you mean is bohemian.
Bohemian. I don't think so. I'm from New Hampshire in the United States. It's not bohemian here. It is just really like
just a painter and an alcoholic.
But gin was her drink of choice. I thought it would be mine. I had like 2 gin and tonics, and then all of a sudden I was like, my throat feels weird. And like the inside of my mouth felt weird. Everything was swelling shut. Because I'm allergic to juniper. Like, I'm allergic to Christmas trees. Fuck. I didn't know what it was made out of.
The one that always catches me out is cranberries. Because it's like, a lot of cocktails will have cranberry juice in, but they won't fucking list it. So
Because if they put cranberry juice on something, people are going to go, ugh.
It's not fun when that kind of thing's... Thing is, the problem is a lot of people have with gin is that it makes them really depressive. I'm the exact opposite. It turns me into a giggling imbecile.
Oh.
Whereas, it's really ridiculous. Whereas one of my close friends, he gets ridiculously depressive if he drinks gin. And we went out flyering for a night that we were both DJing. And we went out, we're basically flyering, which is an excuse for a
bar hopping.
Girl. Bar hopping, pub girl. So we went around these and we're drinking gin. I was getting stupider and stupider, and he was getting and more depressed. And we're sitting in this bar, and it was so funny because Brighton's just a great little place, and we were sitting in this pub, and because it was just the two of us sitting in the dark, like, and I'd ordered oysters because I was hungry.
Seemed so romantic.
Exactly. So this guy comes over and does us a candle. And I'm just like, hey. I thought it was brilliant. He's like,
I love it. And your friend's crying. He's like, you're laughing.
I'm engaged to Tim Mendes.
I feel like in the state of the world, there's worse things to be than engaged to Tim Mendes.
Yeah. Oh, isn't it just... God almighty. It's just like, oh man. Beginning of this year, I had all these gigs planned. I had this planned. I had tickets. I had fucking time off and all this kind of stuff. Gone.
So before COVID, pre-COVID, my job.
Do you even remember it?
I do, vaguely. It's like a hazy, my job was a professional ballroom dancer and a professional performer.
I've seen some of your videos you and Roman have done with the old ballroom stuff.
Yeah.
I'm in awe because I love dancing, but the only thing I can do is the goth two-step, with 2 steps forward, 2 steps back.
You know, yeah.
Catch the bats. You got to catch the bats as well. You know that one. That's all I can do. Well, see, you,
before I ballroom danced, I did a lot of that, like, witchcraft, bathing in the moonlight,
that's dancing, the one. Like,
this kind of girly stuff, that. So, but before COVID, yeah, I was a professional performer and teacher. So we had, you know, that was half of our income is like side gigs, performing places and teaching places. And of course, that all dries up. And we're like, oh, can I swear? I can swear, right?
Of course you can, yeah.
Okay. So we're like, fuck, what the hell are we going to do? and I also did burlesque. That can't happen anymore. So it's like, now I'm just stuck with being a writer. I have to use my brain. It can't just be my boobs anymore.
Well, the thing is, because I'm a DJ, and I used to DJ a lot of burlesque and that kind of stuff down here. And all of, I mean, I started DJing in the 90s, doing all the goth clubs and festivals and all that kind of business. And I've done, like, burlesque, and I used to do fetish clubs a lot. I used to DJ them a lot. And, oh, it is great fun, but that's how I make my money. That's how I make my living. And then all of a sudden this happens. Nope. Yeah, okay.
Like, oh, everything you know how to make money by doing doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm basically a house cat now.
Exactly the same. Exactly. Yeah. I said this to you earlier, didn't I? But,
yeah. I was like, you're going out when you had to run an errand. Yeah. Yesterday I had to run an errand and I'm like, what do I wear for this?
Like, I was more like, how much my elbow's going to hurt when I get in. get out of the way. Oh, I hate going shopping and getting amongst lots of people at the best of times. But in the middle of a pandemic, oh, man.
Yeah, you know, I hate shopping. I think from years of working retail when I had no other viable skills besides being a retail employee, which is an incredibly viable skill that I realized I didn't have because I'm not patient or nice in stores.
I'll tell you a story in a minute.
Add the pandemic onto this and having people, especially in the early days, where I'd wear a mask. And there's a lot of anti-maskers around here that would literally like call me the C word under their breath. Just because I'm like
wearing a mask.
For wearing a mask and being respectfully standing 6 feet away from them. People like, you know, they're like, oh, well, fuck you. I'm just going to touch everything. I'm just going to touch everything. And I'm going to take all this time.
You stupid C word. It's just like, what is your fucking malfunction? For Christ's sake.
I've wanted to wear a mask my entire life.
Not wrong with wearing a mask.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, fuck yes. Can I wear a full costume with it? Yeah. I love the idea of apocalypse wear.
I've got like some actual proper masquerade stuff because I used to do. It was when I lived in the Midlands. Like, oh, it was about like 20 years ago. But we used to do this thing at Aston Ballroom. We used to do a sort of Midsummer Night's fucking masquerade ball.
We'd
have bands on. And, oh, it's great fun. I
have more ridiculous clothes and more masks and more hats than I do regular clothes because as a performer, that's what you need. And at the dance studio that we worked at, once a month, we would have a costume ball of some kind. My boss was great and she was has similar likings to me. So we had a lot of like steampunk balls, a lot of vampire balls, a lot of like, you know, haunted masquerade.
So my all sounding so familiar.
Yeah, my wardrobe is a ton of like weird top hats, long coats, corsets, like pirate wear, and 1920s clothes because I do or did cosplay a lot as a jazz baby. Yeah,
the flapper kind of thing. Well, I used to actually be in a pirate band, and I used to do the reenactment festivals. So half my stuff, obviously, I've got my goth stuff, which is my everyday clothes.
Yeah.
Then I've got that, and then I have my going out goth clothes, which I used to be in. I'm not so much these days, mainly because I'm getting lazy as I get older.
Yeah.
I've always wanted for the big frills and the back comb, the hair.
Love it.
Yeah, all that. I still do it every now and then. But this is kind of normal. This is normal. Yeah. This is my civvies. So this is, I don't own what people would class as normal clothes.
I own, I guess I don't really either, because I have my ballroom dance like teaching clothes, but those tend to either be like dancewear, or I went through this phase where I was really into like the rockabilly wiggle wear. So I have a ton of those like wiggle dresses.
Yeah,
they are cool, but like I can't wear them to the grocery store during a pandemic.
You get a lot of that down here. the like the rockabilly type thing, the psychobilly.
Psychobilly is really what I would prefer.
There's a whole following of it down here. And it's really funny because it's when I do these nights and that, there's always a core of them. And as soon as I put the cramps on, they all go fucking apeshit. Like, Jesus Christ, where did you come from?
I know. When I started teaching ballroom dance like 10 years ago, before that I was a painter and I just worked at home. So all my clothes were just basically like this, except covered in paint. And I had to start wearing, like, I had to like look nice.
It's paint. Just say
it's blood. It's blood.
It's fashion.
But when I had to start teaching, like, this is how to do the foxtrot, like happy dances, like it's a cha-cha. And I'm like, goth girl. So I had to like change my image a little bit, not too much. When I started wearing color, people were like, holy shit, you're not in black. And I'm like, occasionally I wear emerald green or sapphire blue.
I wore a red t-shirt on one of the live things I did, and everyone went mental. They were all like, you're wearing a color. It was just like, I wear red. I mean, my colors are black, red, white. I wear white.
That's the skin color. That's the paleness.
Exactly.
You don't understand. So I'm really pale. I have a light on me right now that's a warming light. Like, look like, okay. So if I don't put the warming light on, this is how pale I am. Watch. Look at this.
Nice. Yeah, to be honest, I look more tanned than I actually am. If you look at, it's because of the light bulb in here is a dim light bulb, and the reason I've done that is because the first few of them are things I look like a freshly dug up cadaver.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's fine. It's pub chat, remember?
It's pub chat.
We talk crap at each other for an hour. I spotted in your bio that you're naturally ginger.
I am naturally ginger.
So am I.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Our skin is like so almost blue.
Yes, pretty much. So I was telling this to Michelle with her like on the last one of these. I was just like, you see that color? That's my natural color.
I'm like, hold on. I showed you, but I'm like, oh, that's a tattoo.
There we go. That's the one.
It's almost clear. I don't know if you can see that in the sunlight. It's almost like a fish.
Translucent.
You can see inside my body. The first few podcasts I did, people kept saying, you look so bleached out. And I'm like, that's the color of my skin. Yeah. They're like, how do you go out into the sun? I'm like, I don't go out into the sun.
That evil thing up there.
I have a sun hat.
Yeah.
And a parasol.
I have a big old Stetson.
I have a big hat.
You must have the same problem with me if you're naturally fair and naturally ginger. As soon as I get out in the sun, I just turn bright red.
Yeah.
It's like I'm going to burst into flames.
Exactly. And my bright red it's like splotchy red too. It's an even red. It's just like patches. No. And then
I get
this
horrible skin peeling thing as well.
Yeah. And then I get like eczema. It's just not a good look.
It's really not, is it? It looks like you've got leprosy or something.
I know. Like I'm physically dying of something that I caught in a Victorian era mill building. Like something
in a
working house. Really? Yes, in a working house. Like, this is what killed the Irish girls back in the day, you know, whatever it was. A few years ago, I went to Las Vegas with Roman to visit some friends. And
you didn't go to one of them chapels, did you?
No.
I was about to turn off the live feed if you did. Bye.
We went to Vegas because we have friends there and we got really cheap tickets.
Nice.
And but we went in the middle of July, and I'd never been to Las Vegas, and I didn't understand that it was going to be 120 degrees during the day. We went out a couple times. We went to like the old sign graveyard and did a couple things, but we would leave really early and then like run back to their house by like 9 a.m. And we just spent like the whole week eating Grubhub at their house. And they were like, what do you guys want to do? And we're like, we don't want to do anything. We don't want to, I don't want to go into the sun. My skin was like peeling off in sheets.
Yeah. Like when you when you decorate your house and you steam off wallpaper.
Yes.
And it just comes off and you like slurps off. That's
it was
how
like
it,
that.
Yeah.
We spent that week in their pool, Roman drinking gin. I was drinking, I think, whiskey, and then it just being submerged in water under like sun umbrellas. And people were like, "How'd you like Vegas? Did you like the Strip?" And we're like, "I didn't really see the Strip." I went to an animal circus that I thought was going to be really cool, but it was meant for 2-year-olds, but that's fine. I still went. It was like a cat circus. Yeah. It was like a circus where they trained rescue cats to do tricks. So
that could be really cool.
I liked it. I splurged the extra $5 per ticket to get VIP seats. I know. I was like, oh my gosh, we're sitting in the front row. And Roman just kept saying, for people who are watching who don't know, Roman is my fiance. Mm. Roman kept saying, do not reach up and touch the cats, because I have a problem. Like if I'm in a museum, I've been known to accidentally touch the paintings and be removed from the museums. So seeing a cat tactile circus, I was like, I'm like, I'm going to touch the cat in the middle of its trick. And he's like, no, don't touch the cats. And I felt bad because we were the only two adults there, like in the front row, sitting in front of these little like 3-year-olds behind us who then couldn't see. But I'm like, I paid the extra $5. I'm not changing seats with the 2-year-old.
I was like, they have like medieval festivals and things like that in Britain.
We do.
Yeah. But there's one actually down here at Hurstmonceux Castle that we tend to go to a lot. We used to do a reenactment and stuff like that. And friends do. And one year we went. And I'm from the north, right? And the stereotype of people from the north of England is that they all have ferrets and wear flat caps, right? I got there, they had ferret racing.
Oh.
And my missus's sister goes, where's Tim gone? And she's like, oh, for fuck's sake. And I'm over there going, come on. It's like what they do. I don't know if you've seen ferret racing. They have the traps. They have the traps like greyhounds, but they have like tunnels, like mesh tunnels. And I'm there. I'm gambling. I'm betting on the ferrets. And it's me and a bunch of kids. And I'm like, come on. Cheering on my ferret, man. I won. My ferret won.
It's because you were an adult and you knew what kind of ferret to bet on. The kids were probably just like, that one's pretty.
Exactly.
They're not good gamblers yet.
Yeah, this is it. You've got to look at the breeding and all.
Yeah. Like the muscular nature of their tiny legs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my fucking dog. Oh, Jesus, they can move. They can. Yeah, my granddad used to breed them, you see. So.
Oh, my gosh. Of course he did.
And when I used to get, like when I was a kid, I used to get told to take the ferrets for a walk, which meant which meant basically put the ferrets in your coat, go on the hills and catch some rabbits.
I know, I was trying to imagine like all the ferrets on little leashes, but.
Yeah, no. Taking the ferrets for a walk was a euphemism.
Which led directly to you being a horror writer, probably.
Oh, why? I mean, yeah. I mean, I've always, It's like speaking of Roman earlier, is he around somewhere?
He is someplace. He's lurking.
Oh, no, tell him I said hello. And I've got to commend the guy. He keeps getting some really cool pictures of insects.
Like yes.
That one on the wing mirror. That was I can't remember the breed of stick insect, but I used to...
That's right. You were the one that would bred them.
So
that day Roman left the house and he came running back in like 2 minutes later with this look on his face, and he's like, you have to see, there's something outside. And I thought, I don't know what I thought, like maybe one of our neighbors was dead or something, well, something that, had happened.
Again, that's you being a horror writer and jumping straight for the worst case scenario.
I did. I was like, oh my gosh, there's like a corpse in the road. So I was like, so I ran out and he's like, look at the car. And then I thought one of our redneck neighbors, oh, I shouldn't say that, smashed the windows because they're a Trump supporter. And I was looking at the car and I'm like, I don't see anything wrong with the car. And he's like, the mirror. And I'm like, and of course I look down and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so cute.
Have I got something I could keep you in?
I know. That's what I thought. I was like, I wish we still had our hermit crab tank. I would put that.
Oh, I love crabs. I keep ornamental shrimp at the minute.
Really?
Cherry shrimp and things like that. And there was a time I went into there's a pet shop down the road, and I went in to get a filter for their tank. And I don't know what the hell happened, but you know they have like crickets and things like that.
Yeah.
For lizards and stuff. And I think I love insects. So I'm over there playing with them. Oh, you're really cute, all the rest of it. Oh, look at your antenna. And then I walk out and I got home and my other half goes, Tim, you've got a locust on your shoulder. This is no lie. And a bloody locust. So I had one of the old tanks that I had. So I put him in and I went out and I got some branches of like some privet and stuff that. Like that. And it was just like, oh, new friend.
we ended up with hermit crabs. I'll preface this with, I am a little bit scared of crabs. But that being said, I still love them. We were at a state fair in Ohio, and it was one of those stupid things where it was like, if you throw 10 balls into this bucket, you win a chameleon. And I was like, I want that chameleon.
Well, we don't get shit. It's always a goldfish over here.
Right. But then it was like, if you don't get the 10 balls in, no matter what, you get to leave with a hermit crab. And we were like, well, that's win-win. So we don't win them chameleon. We win a hermit crab. And I'm like, he's so amazing.
I don't know anything about. Do this all the time in Ohio.
Thank God we don't live there anymore. But so then we're like, okay, we don't know anything about hermit crabs. So then we're looking them up and I'm like, oh, apparently they're very social. So we need to buy more hermit crabs. And now we need a tank. And then, so we ended up with this whole situation, hermit crab situation, where we called it Downton Crabby. And they were all named after like the Downton Abbey characters.
Oh, Rob, love it.
Edith was my favorite because she had like kind of a gingery shell. And they were amazing. Yeah. We moved them from Ohio to New Hampshire when we moved here. And like holding the tank in the car on the drive here, and we had to stop at a hotel.
Yeah, I had to do that when I last moved house with a thing full of cherry shrimp and ornamental snails as well. And they were all climbing up the side of the tank and trying to, and the guy in the driving seat of the removal van is just like, please don't let them come out. only snails, dude.
We had to stop at a hotel at the halfway mark in our journey. And we'd been going back and forth on a few different trips. The first time we brought our dog, and our dog got to stay here. So we always stayed at the same hotel because it allowed pets. Mm. So when we got there with the tank, they're checking us in. They're like, any pets? And we're like, yes, but the tank was on the ground. And then they hand us like this little like pet welcome bag, which is like dog biscuits, everything. And we're like, do you have anything for hermit crabs? And they're like, we do not have anything for crabs, and please make sure the lid stays on.
Like, no, but the thing is, right, I've been a chef all my life. You came into a hotel I'd worked in, right? I'd have gone, right, I think I've got a little bit of squid. Here you go, guys.
But I'll never forget the look on her face of like, oh.
Yeah.
Because usually they check in the pets like by name, and I'm like, oh, this is Edith. This is Edward. This one is actually just called Oak Cabinet. And they were like, okay, Oak Cabinet. You can just call it Downton Crabby. There's a lot
genius.
Of them.
Thing is, you couldn't write that as like a sketch show. Nobody would believe it.
I know. Everybody would say, nobody is going to have, oh, you can hear my dog. No one is going to have a tank of hermit that crabs Lord called Tubby. Down Crabby. That Lord Tubby. Yeah.
I've seen the pictures of him sort of lolling about.
Yeah, that's basically what he does. Mm. That and bark. So, barking now. he can sense I'm feeling joy about another animal. Like he's jealous. I think he's like, is she talking about those fucking crabs again?
Yeah, I used to have an incredibly possessive terrapin. Seriously, if I I had cats as well, and the thing is, I've always had birds. Like my mother always bred them and things like that. And okay. I grew up in a menagerie, basically.
Me too.
It's really
we
funny.
We still have birds.
Yeah. Oh, I love them. The problem is where I live now, because I'm like 5 floors up, and I'd love another cat, and I'd love but I'm not gonna have a cat if it can't go outside. But that's why I've got like crustaceans and things in tanks, because they're quite happy. You know,
yeah. They're like, I'm just fine.
I miss all that.
A lot of people don't like birds, which is funny.
I don't understand that.
I love all animals more than
my
people.
My friend, my best friend for years and years and years, I lived above a pub in the Midlands, and literally 2 minutes walk down the road was the local rock club. And me and him lived in the club, and then we went back to my flat above the pub, right? And that was basically it. But he was just under 7 feet tall, about 300 pounds, right? He was basically built like the Undertaker, the rest of them. Yeah. Like, terrified of my cockatiel. Every time I let it out, he was terrified of it. It used to have him in a corner. Because you know what? Like, cockatiels are little fuckers. If you show...
I have two of them.
I love them. They can be so dominating if they want to be. Yeah.
I will tell you about our cockatiels. I have Stewie and Cricket. Stewie isn't a very old cockatiel. He's like 19, close to 20.
Jesus.
Stewie and his former mate, Julie, tried to have babies for years, but the babies never hatched. Mm-hmm. And then my mother found somebody who had a baby cockatiel, and she was had an egg. And my mom was like, can I buy that egg? Because they'll take care of it. And she was yes. Yeah. So she bought this egg. They did take care of it, and out birthed Cricket. Cricket is our very horny cockatiel. He's like 10 now. He's terrible. He's spiteful. He attacks Stewie, Papa, all the time. He humps him, and he masturbates all the time on this post. Well, he has a few mating calls that are terrible. One is, mommy, 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 mommy. And he like humps.
It's like an old techno tune. We could put a beat for that.
Yeah. He does the techno one, and then he does one that we call like a jazz riff. He goes like, and it gets louder and louder while he's humping. And eventually, Stewie, his father, makes this noise like, shut up. And then he stops and he gets really quiet and keeps doing it.
I ended up inheriting a cockatiel called Merlin, right? He was a little bastard. I loved him. I thought he was great. But they got him because they had an Amazon, right? And the Amazon's like parakeets, companion birds. Okay. So they got this little fucker, the Merlin, right?
The little Merlin.
Yeah. Little sod. And he was dominating this bird. And it was really strutting up and down his perch like this. And he used to go, da, da, da. With his wings up like this.
Yes. That is what Cricket does. He's doing this.
Yeah.
And sometimes he just like bullies poor Stewie into like the corner and is just like, hey dad, watch me masturbate. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like monkeys, isn't it? I mean, that's what monkeys do.
Yeah.
Like the domination thing is, I don't like you, I'm just gonna wank all over you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've only been to one tropical place in my life, like really tropical, right. And that was in Central America. I was in Belize, and the howler monkeys there were so territorial that they would, if you just like, you know, they're hundreds of feet up in the air, but if you walked below them, they would jerk off and throw it at you.
Yeah.
One of the people I was with got doused.
Oh.
And
like Silence of the Lambs, isn't it?
It was like Silence of the Lambs. I was like, yes, that is disgusting.
Money
I'm
shot.
So glad that was not me.
The thing is, like, I had to ask you this because I read your bio earlier, and it said you used to be a magician's apprentice. Like, you used to be
An assistant.
You used to be the lovable assistant, which means. That A, all the pressure was on you, because if you fucked up the handing him the right sleight of hand, it was all went to shit on you. And I have to ask, did you have to put rabbits down your corset?
No. So no, and there would be no room in my corset for that. He was a type of magician that was more like a psychic entertainer. So it was a lot of like mind reading like mentalism.
Yeah,
like not bending spoons per se, but I was never chopped in half. I would have loved.
No, it's funny when you said magician's apprentice. I had images of you, you know, coming out dressed like a peacock and getting.
I did have an outfit that did have feathers, but it was a long red velvet cloak with feathers on the sleeves and feathers down the center. So it was.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, we were very, it was like, it's very like a gothy, it was a gothy act, if you will.
Yeah.
We would go to like different beds and breakfasts and little inns, and it would be like an immersive experience for people where we
It was more like your sort of your burlesque type.
It was like, I hate to say the word seance, but it was like seance-y, more like Victorian occultism.
Yes, yeah. No, that's it's just because you've written Magician's Apprentice.
I know, because
say that to a British person, the first thing they will think is Debbie McKee. Debbie McKee, Paul Daniels, right? Was this tiny little brummy from Birmingham. He used to come out and he had this fucking horrible wig, right? He'd come out and go, I'm going to saw the lovely Debbie McKee in half tonight. And she'd come out like in this thing with her ass hanging out and peacock feathers sticking out of this stupid big tiara. You say that to any British person, that's what they'll think. But we do.
I have outfits like that, though. So yeah. I mean, I could. I really do. I would complete with the peacock feathers.
Oh yeah, the peacock feathers
and like the big, you know, the 3 foot feather fans.
Oh, I. Yeah, one of these last nights that I was actually DJing, I got heroically drunk, and I was wearing my kilt, and I went out and I nicked two of these fans. They were completely different colours, and I went on the stage and went, and I smacked myself in the face with one of them and landed on my arse, and basically ended up exposing myself to everybody in the room.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So. So my burlesque troupe, I had a burlesque troupe for 5 years that I was the choreographer for and the creative director for. We were called Absinthe and Opium. And
love it.
Before our shows, we would give out, because they were 21 plus, free absinthe cocktails. Mm-hmm. So our audience was very lubricated for our shows. So, and that's, our ideal was to get them like drunk enough that we look better, but not so drunk that they're like trying to do something to us.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope. But we did a lot of like weird burlesque, like gothic burlesque. We always did a Halloween show.
Well, it was run by some friends of mine, but it was dark burlesque. It was all, I mean, they wouldn't have got me DJing it if it wasn't.
Right.
See, you know?
Yeah.
It was more, because it used to be done like fetish nights and all that kind of stuff. So it was more fetish type burlesque than the can-can, you know? Right. It was like, we used to have girls come on and they'd have a slot and they'd tell a story with it. And yes. It was always like luring somebody and murdering them, kind of.
So, yeah. I love that. That's basically, our Halloween shows were always dark like that. We performed in a theater mainly. So we had storytellers, we had belly dancers, we had musicians, we had strippers, we had Roman and I doing traditional dance. So we did an Edgar Allan Poe show where we did a burlesque version to the entire, we did The Raven in its full, all 12 minutes of it. Awesome. We had an actor doing that. We had girls coming out. I had 12-foot wings that, like, it was just kind of epic. We did a Lizzie Borden axe murderer.
Did you get any
number.
Videos of any of that?
We, I love
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what I try and do with, you know, these live things. I have a bit of that sort of grand guignol in there. I like to get the props and the, I don't just sit and talk, I sit and read, I'll act it out. And
yeah, you have
I
to.
I love that kind of thing. I've always been into that kind of thing.
Because it's theater. It has
exactly.
to, and even I hate to say, like, as writers, when we do readings and stuff like that, we can't just be like reading a back of a cereal box.
The thing is, I've seen so many people and big names that they can't make that jump. I've seen some people who are really like tremendous writers, like their writing would like floor me, you know, but they haven't got that kind of theatrical angle to it.
Yeah, and I think, well, so many writers are, by nature, very introspective.
Yeah.
Because
we're
choosing to be writers. And there's in a Venn diagram, there's like the introvert, and then there's the crazy extrovert, and sometimes they overlap, and that's kind of where I think you are, where I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where...
Which is something that, like, why I, like, as soon as I, we met through something, and it was just like, oh yeah, I like her. She's on my wavelength, man. And it was all like, because you recorded the interview I did with Trisha.
Yes, yes.
And we said at the time, it's just like, we are going to have this chat at some point.
I know, it's great. There's just people, and this is when I sound kind of like new agey and like bathing in the witch light, people that you connect with like immediately where you're like, oh, you're one of my people, like right away. Oh, that's, you're my, one of my people. That's fine. And my tribe of weirdos.
Yeah.
You're like a hermit crab loving.
The head of the British branch.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We need badges.
We do. Oh, I'd wear buttons. It with pride.
I would wear it.
Yeah,
I would
I'd wear it with pride. I really would. Weirdo and proud.
Have you always been like a goth kid? Like, when did you get into the, like,
I didn't actually get into it.
It just happened.
It was just like, because I mean, I grew up in sort of Manchester and all that, like in the like 80s and 90s.
I grew up in Manchester, New Hampshire. How weird.
I'm Manchester. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I just got into the music and all the rest of it. And I've always been like this. When I was at school, I pretty much looked like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up very quickly and then never grew again. And seriously, you look at my school pictures and I've got like long, like dyed black hair because I hated my natural color. Because it's one of them gingers that isn't all ginger. It's got bits of mousy brown in it as well.
That's the kind of ginger I am, really.
It's like more auburn
in the right in natural light. It's red, but like in this light it's brown.
That's like mine. It's one of those non-colors, and it used to really fucking annoy me, especially because my facial hair is quite
dark.
So I was just like, dyed it, and it's like my last year of school, because I bailed when I was 16. The picture there, I'm stood right in the center and I look so cheesed off to be there, and I'm there with hair down here and eyeliner.
Yes.
And everyone around me is sort of like giving me a wide berth. I was like on my row, there was me and my two mates who also had long hair. Neither of them were like goths, but they were sort of metal
guys. Yeah,
they were into like the time, like one of them was really into Iron Maiden, the other one was really into Slayer. So I had them here, and then me in the middle, looking like a just fallen out of a Sisters of Mercy concert.
I feel like when I look at my high school picture, or like the little candid pictures of me that I have in high school, I'm wearing like the same stinking outfits, like all black, black and white striped socks, combat boots. My hair is still the same. It's like not as nice now, I guess, because there's a lot of gray in it. But I'm like, I think I haven't changed my lipstick color since I was young. Like nothing has changed.
Well, so the only thing that's really ever changed with me has been the hair, because for a long time I went with a really high undercut.
Oh, okay.
And I had it braided, and I used to wear a Stetson a lot. But I was going through a major sort of industrial sort of ministry phase.
I was just
going
to say, you went through, everybody goes through their ministry phase.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was there and giving it like, so you got these pictures and you got all these kiddies. It's like the early 90s. And they look like Take That and all these pop bands at the time, and all the girls look like the Spice Girls, and there's me sitting there stoned out of my gourd looking like fucking Al Jergensen from Ministry.
I feel like I went through this like brief New Kids on the Block phase, obviously. And I still have like a fondness for the New Kids, because that was like my puberty, my very early puberty, when I was like, boys, look at that. But then
I was Bananarama.
That's equal.
Yeah.
But I think once I found The Cure and Depeche Mode, that's when I was like, oh, I don't need to listen to happy music.
This is why I was kind of an outcast among outcasts, because all my friends had just discovered, in like 92, 93, all my mates had discovered Nirvana and Pearl Jam.
Right.
But Depeche Mode had just released Songs of Faith and Devotion, which was, in my opinion, the best fucking album ever written.
See, oh, that kind of gives me chills. I think, what is the best album ever written? That is up there, but I always lean towards Disintegration by The Cure.
I do like that. But actually, to be honest, I prefer Pornography by The Cure. I'm more of a Pornography man. I preferred their earlier stuff. I thought by that point, I mean, Disintegration was great, don't get me wrong, but I preferred things like Hanging Garden, something with it. I loved them
a little bit more
than that menace.
Yes.
And then it was just so, like, against Robert Smith's vocals. You had all this, tribal stuff going on. It was just like, oh, that's fucking awesome. Yeah.
I think I fell in love with Disintegration so much because, I can't remember, I was in, like, 7th or 8th grade. And that's when I heard it. And it was so, to me, like, so bittersweet. And it was so sad. And I felt like when I listened to it, I could hear leaves crunching on the road.
And
people in sweaters crying in cemeteries because a boy dumped them. Like, to me, I was like, this is all of my like 12-year-old angst.
I
would listen to it.
Well, the thing is, I had with Pornography, because I was always more of a, like, I was a very angry young man.
No.
Yeah, I was always very angry, so I love that. I love that sort of, like, almost threatening melancholy.
Yeah.
That kind of, like,
I'm
miserable, you touch me, I'll kill you. Kind of, you know.
I like that description, that, like, menacing melancholia.
Menacing melancholy. I'm going to coin that.
You should. I've been trying to. So way earlier, a billion years ago, when we first started this, you said I was a writer of gothic fiction.
Indeed. And I was about to get back to all this because of your books.
But somebody asked me what gothic, like what the difference between gothic horror was in horror. And I'm like, well, there's no real difference. But the classification for gothic horror to me is the feel. It's the Gothic, the past is still alive, but also it's pleasurable terror.
Yeah, like, and the thing is, it doesn't have to be set in the past. It's just going to have, because I mean, I would class some of the stuff I write as Gothic.
Yes.
Just by like osmosis, it has to be somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
It's that beauty and tragedy, isn't it?
That's exactly it. And so
have you ever read any W.H. Pugmire?
I have not.
He died a couple of years ago, but he was one of the more recent Lovecraft circle. But his stuff is poetic. I mean, it's very cosmic horror. It's all Lovecraftian stuff. Mm-hmm. But he's got his own take on it, and he was a huge fan of Oscar Wilde and Baudelaire.
Oh,
and he does these epic poems, man. Seriously, check him out if you like that.
I will.
I mean, he is my modern day hero. Is W.H. Pugmire.
I will check him out because I write Gothic. I hate to do that air quotes, but when I write Gothic horror.
I always want to break people's fingers when they do that.
Because I just know some people, I've had people read my books and go, it's not horror. And I'm like, go fuck yourself. So sorry, everybody who doesn't think it's horror. But when I write Gothic fiction, I'm very lyrical. It's almost, it's a fine line between a novel and a poem for me. Where memories.
I mean, I am with my stuff that goes Gothic because I can just smell absinthe in my sinuses when I'm writing it.
I know. Somebody asked me, they're like, I don't know. They read my book and they loved it, and they were just like, I loved it because it was like a hallucination. I didn't know what was real and what wasn't, and I was like, well, that's because half of my characters are on laudanum. They didn't know what the hell was going on. So
I remember we had this talk, didn't we, about the taste of laudanum?
Yes.
Yeah, we actually. You see, for you there at home, what we talk about when we talk to each other, it's like, so laudanum. Would you describe it as bitter and earthy?
No, I know. I'm like, it's like licorice and rotted leaves.
I'm thinking soil and aniseed.
Yes, exactly. As it was our conversation, I'm like, is that right? You think that's what I'm going with? I can't get my hands on a bottle of laudanum from 1873 to taste it, but I feel like it would be soil and somewhere between wet dirt and sambuca.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've always. Yeah, and that's what we kind of settled on, wasn't it?
Yeah,
if
two of us settle on it, then it's a thing.
Licorice and wet dirt.
Yeah, which strangely sounds appealing to me. I'm just like, I would try that.
I remember the first, because absinthe was banned for a long, long time. I remember when they first they relaxed the laws over here in like 1999, 2000. But you had to have you could only serve it if you had a table service and everyone was limited to a certain amount, right? And we had it on in this little tiny goth club above a pub in the middle of Wolverhampton, right? And we sat down and we had these girls in burlesque coming out with these fucking, well, you had the whole works, man, the tridents.
All this sugar cubes and spoons.
Superb. But because it was a DJ, the limit didn't count for me.
So what we're saying is you don't remember the rest of the night.
I remember it being very pretty.
Because this is probably when they
I woke up on a strange person's floor. Sign of a good evening, I was in my 20s, it was a sign of a good night. Wake up on some random person's floor going, why can I taste Star of Anise?
The first time I had absinthe, Roman and I had gotten a artist residency for a week at this place in Cleveland, Ohio. She had, like, the person who was running it had, like, smuggled out a bottle of absinthe from Paris.
Nice.
And we'd already been drinking, like, vodka, lemon martinis or something garbagey like that. And and then she was like, we had dinner, and she's like, I have absinthe. And I'm like, oh, I remember drinking the first bit of absinthe. And then I remember starting the second bit of absinthe. And then I remember nothing until maybe like 4 a.m. when there was an intimate moment happening between Roman and I, where we both at the same time were like, holy crap, now we're awake?
Yeah. That was like me and the floor. The last thing I remembered was being in this club and taking my top off and swinging it around my head because it was pissed up my gourd. It was a big frilly shirt. So I took it off and held it by the sleeve, and it took up the entirety of the dance floor. It was like a bloody helicopter propeller, you know. Voop, voop, voop. Absinthe, man.
I know. Yeah. Have you seen the movie We Lurk in the Shadows? Or maybe, is that the name? Or it's a comedy, a very dry, very, I think it's Australian or New Zealand. It's about vampires. Mm. And they live in like a flat together. And it's pseudo-reality show. Like, it is stinking hilarious because they talk about how they're like, we are vampires, we go to goth clubs now, and they wear like all the outfits and they're trying to blend in. I have never laughed so hard in my life because Roman and I were just cracking up, and he's like, I think they're describing our wardrobes.
I mean, the one thing I saw about like the goth thing in mainstream that made me like piss my pants was it was actually The Big Bang Theory. It was,
I've never seen an episode of that.
No, but it was early on. It's on all the blood. There's one channel, right? E4, and it's repeated all the fucking time. And I think I was hungover and I'm watching this thing on TV, and nothing was really sinking in until this episode. And the horny one of the group, Wallowitz, decides that he's going to go goth. He's going to go goth and go to the goth club. So him and Raj, the Indian guy who can't speak to women. They wear these tattoo sleeves and they got this goth club. Oh, it's fucking hilarious.
I will look that one.
That's
up.
So funny. That is exactly what used to happen when I've like every restaurant and bar I've ever worked in, because people are always kind of like, I don't get it. I've always been kind of like, well, come out then, you'll get it. But that's exactly how it is. People always come up to me like when they say, I'll come out with you tonight. People will text me, do I have to wear makeup?
Yes, it's mandatory.
Yeah, it's mandatory, for fuck's sake, man. It's like, I found a black t-shirt. It was like, oh, well done.
Good for you.
Yeah,
good. Do you know they sell those at the dollar store?
They don't get how fucking patronizing that is. It's just like, I'm not going to make any effort to fitting into your social circles. Why should you with mine?
I like it when people just automatically say to me, they're like, you'll like this because you're goth, or you'll like this because you're a sad girl. And I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean? I also teach foxtrot and cha-cha. You can be happy and goth.
I consider myself quite a cheerful chap.
You're very cheerful.
I just happen to like it. It's a music scene first and foremost for me. Everything comes secondary. I just happen to feel comfortable. But no, the best one is when people come up to you and go, so why can't you dress like the rest of us? My answer is usually, you must have had that at some point. Why can't you dress normally? My answer is always, because it'd mean I'd look like you.
Oh.
I would look like you, and that is hell to me.
I remember being, so I have asthma.
Yep.
Of course I do. So I was in a pale red hair. It comes with asthma. I was in high school. It's like a senior, I think, in high school. And I had a really terrible asthma attack. I had to get brought to the hospital. Don't worry. I lived, everybody. It's a happy ending. I remember my outfit.
Don't believe the lies. She's a cadaver.
I'm a cadaver. I remember my hair at that time was long, curly, and like a deep burgundy, almost purple. I was wearing a dark purple crushed velvet dress, black and white striped socks, and combat boots. and I get brought to the ER by my mom. Nice. And I'm getting a breathing treatment and I'm fine. And the doctor's like, all right, she's doing good. And then my mother says to the doctor something like, can you tell her that she would probably be happier if she didn't dress like this?
Oh.
I'm like, but I have like a breathing treatment on, so I can't even say anything. And it was just like such a mom thing to do. Like maybe her asthma wouldn't be as bad if she wasn't
if she was more cheerful.
If she didn't have, well, if she wasn't so melancholy. And probably like if I wasn't smoking clove cigarettes nonstop because I had to as a goth.
Victorian thing though, isn't it? Women always had the vapors. And it was always
that just means gas. Like they're just like they have so much gas and they're like, oh my gosh, I'd rather faint than fart.
Yeah, I know.
That's what the vapors are.
Yeah. Trapped wind.
Trapped wind because we're wearing like, corset and like nine flaps. Skirts.
Yeah. Just belch for fuck's sake.
Do it. Even if you have to leave the room.
Yeah, yeah. Well you know, put a napkin up.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, my body still treats itself like a human body.
I do. I have to do that all the time. Like when you like, I don't know if you do it, but I always like to make an effort, like when I go around my partners. I'm not gonna sit there and belch and fart at the table.
Oh no.
You know what I mean? So
because that's just polite.
Exactly. Politeness, which is something something getting lost in the ether.
Yes.
There's a difference between following rules and just having fucking manners.
Yeah, I know. So that's why I asked you when we started this, I was like, oh, can I swear? Because that's polite. Because
yes, indeed.
Accidentally said the words on like a podcast recently that I was on that I didn't realize was conservative. I said the words anal sex. Only because I was quoting, a porn star. That I was set up next to at a convention like years ago. So I was quoting her, so right. I said anal sex, and I might have said like gangbang. And the person who was interviewing me, I could see their face was like, oh, and I'm like, oh, I forgot that.
Sorry, I've just got to cut in here. You just reminded me of one of the funniest moments in my school life, right?
Oh, God.
In there in fucking
I can't
drama.
Imagine what I said just reminded you
in there in drama, right? The drama teacher comes up. No, it was music, and he was on about the score, right? And he was there and he's sitting on the piano and he's like, he goes, can any of you in the class tell me what that was from? And we're all like, nah, some boring old crap, you know. And he goes, that was from Chitty Chitty Gang Bang.
Oh, Freudian slip.
Yeah, that was me done. I had to be sent out of the room. I had to go and compose myself.
Oh my gosh. I would have probably laughed myself into a Chitty Chitty Gang Bang is a great name.
Yeah. I always thought that would be a really good name for a sort of psychobilly band.
Yes.
Wouldn't it? Because you got all these all God. Sort of like Reverend Horton Heat and all this kind of stuff. You got all these sort of euphemisms in the name.
Yeah. Chitty Chitty Gangbang is a good one.
Great. Ah,
yeah, brilliant. I always had, every time I see a weird phrase or like bad graffiti that sticks in my brain, I'm like, that is the name of a great band. Mm. My current band name and front person name has a terrible swear word in it, so I just want to I'm going to tell people, if you are easily offended, please block your ears for me saying this would be my punk band, and it's called Ladybug Cunt and the Slutty Puppets. And I would be Ladybug Cunt, where I would do like punk
it.
rap, punk like
love
goth
it.
rap.
Love it.
I think Roman even wrote a song about it, just jokingly, but I'm like, hell yeah. If this writing thing doesn't work out.
Oh, brilliant. I absolutely love it. You see, over here, you're never going to offend anybody with the word cunt. Billy Connolly, right, he was talking about America, and he said he has a lot of trouble because he's Scottish, right? So he uses cunt the same way some other people use punctuation. And he was talking about he was talking about the Prime Minister, or he was talking about politics, and somebody said, oh, do you mean Cameron? He went, no, no, some other cunt. And somebody in America was like aghast, like, oh, you can't say that word.
Yeah.
And he was just like, what? He is a cunt.
Yeah. You know, that word, it doesn't offend me. Very few words offend me. Racist words offend me. Yeah, derogatory yeah. Well, terms.
Racist and derogatory terms. I am fucking constantly shocked, right? We are living in 20 bloody 20. And people are still doing this shit.
I don't get it. I
should have had this done by now. It's like, why are people such wankers?
I would think, especially since we claim we're like this dominant species, like humans are the fucking best thing ever.
Mm.
Well, fuck you. We're not
picking on different colored ants, do we?
Right. I was like, you know, if we could at least like get our shit together where we're not killing people for no reason, hating people for no reason, then maybe we'll be the best species on this planet. But for right now, I feel like most of the animals are
way ahead of us. Well, it was something I did one of the, you know, you get them from time to time, you get these sort of text interviews and you have the questions and I fill in the blanks, basically. And one of them was about whether you'd kill the pet or not. And I was like, well, I don't, you know, because there's schools of horror. And I'm like, yeah, I'll kill a pet if the pet is necessary. But in my stuff, the pet is more likely to kill you. And that stems from the fact that this is a generalization, you know, present company accepted and some very cool people accepted. I prefer animals to people because animals don't have a fucking agenda.
So in one of my books, I broke the, I know there's cardinal rules where you shouldn't kill an animal, but I didn't describe
it's necessary.
But it was necessary for my character because you had to understand her psychosis. And then it's later explained why she did it. She didn't, it's very strange, but you know, everybody says like that, there's a documentary that's called Don't Fuck with Cats. Like, There might be in one of my books at some point, so I don't want to give spoilers, but a cat dies. It's not a cat you're attached to. It's not a cat you're attached to. It's just a cat. It's random. It's quick. It is sad. I love animals more than anything. I'm a vegetarian, but I did kill a cat in one of my books.
Oh, I've killed all manner of creatures in mine, but they're always off camera.
Yeah, this was like basically, it was like an in the shadows kind of.
Mine is usually cadavers. Like you'll find like.
I did have a cadaver.
Yeah, yeah. Usually you find the cadaver of a dog. And it's hinted that the main character, while they were going fucking crazy, ate them. kind of thing.
Yeah. So I had only one on camera, but in the shadows, non-described animal death. And it is. And truthfully, when people read it, they're going to go, trust me, it's actually necessary for the plot. Mm. You might not see that for a while, but it is necessary.
As long as it's not gratuitous, man.
It wasn't, you know, I know.
I say that about everything. I mean, you can, as long as it isn't gratuitous, as long as there's a bloody point. I mean, because I've done a bit of slush reading and things like that.
Yeah.
And I've had these stories come through, right? And some of them, it's like a fucking snuff fantasy.
Yes.
It's just like, did you write that one-handed while you were jacking off? It's just like, I don't understand people's malfunction. It's just like, did you honestly think we're gonna fucking print that?
Sometimes I think people write overly violent and overly sexual, and again, I have no problem with either of those things, to fill a word count. Like, if your plot and your story can't fill the word count, don't fill the last 2,000 words with, you know, somebody's cock going in and out.
That is some brilliant
advice.
And
the knife, again and again and again and again.
Like a cock. Yeah.
Like a cock. Like a cock going in and out. And again, I am not opposed to...
That is some great advice.
Don't
fill it. Here we go. This is now a public service.
Yeah. Writers out there, if you're low on the word count, it's okay if it's a novella.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the thing is, my stuff, I never think about word counts when I'm writing. I'll get an idea, I'll write for something, sometimes it hits. I mean, I've got a novella coming out in a month or something, which started out as a short story for a monthly competition, right? And I started writing it, and I was just like, well, and I did, I clicked word count. It was like 7,000 words. It was just like, what was the word count on that again? 6,000. Ah, fuck it. I guess it's a novelette. So I carried on going, and then went, hang on, let's have a look again. It's like, no, it's a novella.
So I, my debut novel is called, this is going to plug myself right here, Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent. That book is up for, it's in the finals for the Kindle Awards for
Best Horror. Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I was really like, because I said on that, it's like, I mean, that's some, like,
I'm thrilled and shocked because it's a very poetic, really like symbolism heavy novel. It's very literary. But that book I started, I always joke, I started it 20 years ago because I thought it was going to be a play. Then I thought it was going to be a graphic novel. And then I gave up on it. Yeah. And then I said, fuck it. I'm just going to write a short story. And that short story turned into Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, which is now, you know, in the top
five horror novels. The thing is, it's kind of taken off because I remember when you launched it. And I remember, like, my reading pile is like Ben Nevis in it.
Yeah, mine's ridiculous.
Yeah, my To Be Read, it is on my list because it sounds like my cup of tea. And I remember when he released it, and I thought, oh, that sounds really kind of cool. And you had this cool cover going on as well, because I remember you were entering that into some thingy-bobs. And I just remember thinking, that sounds really great. And then I've seen all your promo coming up to the new one you've got out.
What's yes. That? It's called From Daylight to Madness.
That's start of a series, isn't it? Because I see that you've got
it's a start of a 2-book series. So
you've got that coming out in November, haven't you?
I do. Yeah. And then it's done. Right. And this I had to cut in half because word count reasons.
Again, there we go. This is because I
thought I was writing one book. I was like, okay, I'm writing one book. And then I was like, holy shit.
That's too much.
I did like a poll on Facebook. To me, it's still one long book, but I did a poll on Facebook, like, what is the length of the book that people want to read right now? Let's say it's an ebook. And I was shocked at how low their word counts were.
It's more like novels, isn't it? A lot of it.
I know. People are like, I want it 55,000 words. I'm like, ooh, that can't happen.
Somebody actually, they want it because I'm, being a jobbing writer, you join all these groups, right?
And yes.
You see all these posts. And somebody actually posted up the other day, and they were like agonizing over word counts. And they were like saying, like, but what about characters? Should I worry about character counts and all the rest of it? And I just went, look, just don't worry about any of it. Just write the story.
Yeah.
Just write the story. You can always get the shears to it if you need to. Or, and that was exactly my words, is what you've just said, just split it into 2 books. Yeah. Hell, go for a trilogy of novellas. God, you know.
Yeah. I was very lucky.
Work for you.
Yeah. I was very lucky with From Daylight to Madness, which just came out in August.
Yeah.
And my new book's coming out in November. It's all the same story, which is called When the Sleeping Dead Still Talk, that there was a very clear moment at almost the halfway mark where there would be, if this was a movie, a huge twist.
Yeah.
So,
and that's a great point to.
Yeah. So split. I'm like, I'm just going to twist it and then stop it and then, you know, leave people kind of wanting more. But it had all been written. So it's not like I'm one of those authors that writes a series and it's like, you know what I'm going to do? Never finish it.
Oh, yeah. But anyway. We're going to have to stop wrapping this up now. Because
I know, we've been talking forever.
That's what always happens with these. I mean, I've noticed this with After Hours. It just kind of gets on, and it's the format because, again, you do your own very similar series, Vox Vomitus, don't you?
I do Vox Vomitus. So,
I need to come on as a guest, man. I can't believe I've never been asked.
We work with the Global Authors on the Air Network, and they have a lot of contacts with amazing publishers. No, it's okay. Because we were thinking this too. We were like, I can't believe we're booked. Oh.
There we go. So you want to get hold of these books that she's been talking about.
Thank you.
Yeah, is that the Facebook one?
Yeah, that is the Facebook.
Yep. Well, that's how you get hold of her Facebook. And for the people who are listening to this on a podcast, because it is coming out as a podcast as well.
Love it.
Is www.facebook.com/JenniferAnnGordonAuthor. All one word, capitalized where needed. This is what I actually meant to put up. It is about where you can get hold of the books. It's the Amazon thing.
Oh.
There we go. I spared no expense with the Amazon books.
Very, very high tech.
Yeah. I think it works better for this. I mean,
it does.
Yeah. So that's amazon.com/author/JenniferAnnGordon.
And the easy thing too, I don't know if you have a cardboard for this, is if people just go to my website.
I mean, that one.
Yeah, that one. That's just JenniferAnnGordon.com. And that's Anne with an E, like Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah. Well, that's how I spell Anne. I mean, that's the British spelling of Anne.
That is the British spelling of Anne.
Yeah.
I know. So as do I. I'm like, so my dad was Scottish and English, and my mother is French.
Where's he from then, your dad?
He was born in New Hampshire, but
all right,
the last name is Gordon, so it's a good solid
Scottish name. I mean, because my family is from Arbroath in the Highlands.
Yeah, I don't know too much, honestly, because he was so Scottish New England that they didn't talk about a lot, but I've been trying on Ancestry.com, and I know the first private school I went to, my uniform was actually the Gordon tartan.
Awesome.
Which that's I was like, brilliant. This is my tartan. And people were now like, shut fantastic. Up, weirdo.
That's fantastic because I have my kilts and my tartan as well. You know, so it's
my tartan is very kind of plain, you know, very just like utilitarian tartan.
Mine is as well. It's kind of, mine's kind of dull, but with this flash of like almost yellow in it.
Yeah, like, mine has a tiny yellow, but it's like shades of dark greens, darker blues, and like a dark yellow.
Reds and greens.
Oh, you have reds
and
greens.
And then
so
just
lucky.
A bright slash of yellow, just random.
Lucky. Yeah. I mean, my tartan was used for a Catholic school uniform, so it's that non-flashy.
Yeah.
Like, let's put them in something nobody will want to have sex with. I know, the Gordon tartan.
There you go. Stay away from the Campbells. That'll get everybody riled up.
Too much reds and purples there.
Too many reds and purples. Get all the pulses racing.
I know, like a horny cockatiel.
Anyway, Jennifer, I'm going to have to wrap this up because...
No, I'm sorry. I know we've chatted
so
long.
No. Don't ever apologize. This is like, I mean, there is no time limits. This isn't going to be edited. This is just going to go up.
It's the movie of our conversation.
Well, that's the whole... I mean, this is what I was saying earlier, like before we went on air, is the fact that because there are so many interviews where everybody asks the same damn question. And I think it's just easier if we just chat.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's more interesting.
You know, the hardest thing about just...
Well, so.
The only problem for me that I've had with just chatting is no problem, but it's the getting the time. Because my show is supposed to be a half hour, and it's never been a half hour. So I'm always at a half hour going, oh my gosh, we haven't even...
We haven't started.
Well,
this is why I kind of... I mean, hour and a half is kind of the limit. Right.
Yeah.
But as I've done to other people I've spoke to, we haven't even scratched the surface, Jennifer. We haven't. So you're coming back on. You're coming back on at some point.
You
don't have an option in this.
I mean, I'm
I
a
like
house
having
cat.
A drink with you. You're coming on.
Tim, my drink is done. Tim, I'm a house cat. I would love to be back on the show.
Perfect. Excellent. And for all you people, listeners or viewers at home, again, if you want to get hold of Jennifer and her fantastic work, www.jenniferanngordon.com. This will be going up on my YouTube thing, which you're probably already on, so you probably don't need this, except if you're listening.
Or
so that's tinyurl.com/TimMendesYouTube. And... Yeah. The smallest round of, oh, I love that. You got the pout right as well. That's the gallery, isn't it? Oh, the wave. You got the royal wave. How fantastic. I love
trying.
It. No, it was perfect. Almost, yeah, almost perfect.
Almost perfect.
Almost.
I'd probably like, smack myself in the face if I tried to.
Yeah. And again, if you want to keep up my literary misadventures, it's timmendyswriter.wordpress.com. Well, thank you. This has been brilliant.
Thank you. I've loved fun. It.
Yeah, me too. Been great fun talking crap with you for a while.
Thank you for letting me day drink at 2 p.m. on a Friday, my time.
I am an enabler. And thank you all for watching and listening. And if I could have actually stopped it and made it that slick, it would have been cool. But no, I can never find the button. Thanks, Jennifer. I'll speak to you soon. I should have this up soon. I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Great job, Tim. Thank you.
Cheers.